My military instructors never taught us about fear. Well, that is, they never addressed fear by name, although it was always an undercurrent in what they taught. We all recognized fear as a constant element of the human condition, but we never said as much. It's unbecoming of a warrior to voice his or her fears, or so we thought. And that may be why my instructors never mentioned fear as an element of military planning. Well, the wise do take account of fear, both their own and the fears of others. General Daniel Morgan did just that at the Battle of Cowpens in the backcountry of South Carolina during the American Revolution. Morgan's small force consisted mostly of volunteer militia, backed by a few seasoned units of the Continental Army. They faced a British force comprised of veteran professionals who were accustomed to winning victories over their less experienced American opponents. Every man in both armies probably had that in mind on the eve of battle in January 1781. This time, though, the American commander included his troops' inexperience and fear in his battle plan. The volunteers had a tendency to break ranks and run away in the heat of battle. Knowing this, General Morgan asked his militiamen to find the courage not to stand against the British regulars through the entire battle, but to stand long enough to fire two volleys, and then fall back behind the Continental soldiers. If they could do that, then they could disrupt the British advance and prepare the way for the Continentals to counterattack. The plan worked perfectly. Instead of fleeing in fear, the militia fired twice, reformed their ranks behind the Continentals, and jumped back into the battle at just the right moment to deliver the final blow. By trusting their commander and doing as he asked, the militia soldiers turned their fears into stepping stones toward victory, setting off a chain of events that ended with the final American victory at Yorktown 10 months later. The miraculous outcome of Cowpens reminds me that our Creator, like Daniel Morgan, takes account of our fears in His kingdom plans. It began in Eden, when He anticipated the choices of our first ancestors. They wrestled with the fear of missing out on their potential of greatness, and then with the thought that they might not be able to trust the Creator because He was withholding something vital from them. After they ate of the forbidden fruit and realized their acquired knowledge outstripped their ability to wield it properly, they feared the responsibility they had taken on themselves and the Creator's retribution for their disobedience. Last of all, they feared each other because they realized they could never trust each other as they had before they embraced the temptation of their pride. It's a cruel grace that the Creator allowed this to happen. Cruel in the sense that it set a precedent for all humanity for all time. And grace that the Creator has used that precedent to shape us into vessels worthy of His eternal presence. Some choose to submit their fears to His sovereign will, and others choose to manage their fears themselves, in hope of finding a way to challenge the Creator more successfully than did our first ancestors. We see the contrast of those two approaches in the story of the Pharaoh who presided over Israel's enslavement in Egypt. In Exodus we read, "Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. He said to his people, 'Look, the people of the children of Israel are too numerous and too powerful for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or else they will grow even more numerous, so that if war breaks out, they may join our enemies, fight against us, and then escape from the land.' This is the voice of one who grasps for power in fear that someone may take that power from him. It mattered little to Pharaoh that the Hebrews lived peacefully within his realm, that they had served Egypt faithfully for generations, and that they had no aspirations to rule over the Egyptians. What mattered was that they were foreigners, and privileged foreigners at that. The blessings bestowed on Israel by the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and administered through the previous pharaohs, served as a sufficient excuse to whip up the fears of the native Egyptians. Perhaps the new pharaoh needed a distraction from the failings of his own regime. The alien Hebrews, therefore, served as the perfect foil to the ideal of Egyptian purity, and a fitting target for the seething resentment of the masses. That resentment itself was the product of fear that their own livelihoods were eroding away under adverse political, economic, and social circumstances. It's easy to project such a scenario backward through time to ancient Egypt. After all, it has happened often enough throughout our human story. Is there any people group who have not become the object of another's fears? And is there any people group who have not projected their fears onto another in a way that justifies any action against them? Well, that's the essence of the human story, and will remain so as long as we continue to insist on being the gods of our own little worlds. It might be better if we learn to be content with who we are and what we are created to be and do. The Hebrew midwives Shifra and Puah found a way to do that. They feared God. But that doesn't mean they had no fear of Pharaoh, but it does lead us to conclude that they did what Messiah Yeshua exhorted his disciples to do. I say to you, my friends, you should not be afraid of those who kill the body, since after this they have nothing more they can do. But I will show you whom you should fear. Fear the one who, after the killing, has authority to cast into Gehenna. Yes, I tell you, fear this one. We honor Shifra and Puah as courageous women of valor who stood between the genocidal policies of a power-mad regime and the Hebrew infants. We are right to do so. They might humbly protest that they weren't courageous at all, but that they simply did what their God called them to do. And that, too, is something we can easily project backward through time, because it's what the saints of God have always done. This is what Paul meant in saying, "Work out your salvation with fear and trembling." Well, this is how our Creator incorporates our fears into His plans. Tyrants count on fear to divide their opposition and keep them in submission. Our Redeemer counts on His people to overcome their fears, realizing that there is no hope in anyone else but Him. If He made us, He can unmake us, and then make us again. That's the beauty of resurrection. It gives a dimension of hope far beyond the terrors of tyrants. It's the kind of hope that moved Shifra and Puah to defy Pharaoh and to receive a greater blessing. So God was good to the midwives, and the people multiplied, growing very numerous. Because the midwives feared God, He gave them families of their own. Ultimately, our fears confront us with the loving reality of our Creator. The opposite of fear is love, as John the Apostle writes. In this way, love is made perfect among us, so that we should have boldness on the day of judgment. For just as He is, so also are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. For fear has to do with punishment, and the one who fears has not been made perfect in love. We love because He first loved us. Because He loves us, He allows our fears to exist. Without them, we would have no motivation to seek Him. Our fears will not disappear entirely once we begin to seek Him. But when we do, we open ourselves to His leading, and our fears become stepping stones toward victory and ever greater glory.